Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Pull Up Podcast, brought to you by HoopsCritic.com.
Hello and welcome everybody to NBA Unplugged. I'm filling in for the Monday night show for Josh. I'm Jacob Noble, your host tonight, and alongside of me, as usual on Monday night, is Mr. Snotty Drippin. How you doing, James?
I'm good, man. Let's do it. The final four.
The top four, numbers one and two, both sides. And, of course, joining us, our special guest today is Kelly Scaletta. How are we doing today, Kelly?
Good, good. What's up?
Not much. So just a little side note, Josh is voiceless with the flu, and I have lost my voice this weekend, so this is going to be a fun podcast just for you listeners out there. But let's start off real quick, Kelly, with an article you recently put out on today's fast break, because before we jump into the finals, let's kind of just talk about what went wrong in the past. And I think you had a very interesting article here. Again, it's on today's fast break, and it talks about Adrian Wojnarowski's radio appearance where he kind of broke the news that Fred Hoiberg is the Bulls' number one prospect of head coaching. And what I found interesting, it's very deep, and we'll post the link later, it talks a lot about the offense here. And my question to you is, if they do this, do you see that they might need a personnel change?
You know, that's what I like about the Hoiberg situation is I was looking at the kinds of plays he runs, and so much of what he does, the personnel they already have, just works with the kinds of things he does. You know, like he does a lot of side pick and rolls that would work great with Jimmy Butler and Nikola Mirotic, where, you know, the four will come out to the three. He does things like where he positions the power forward on the fast breaks. It just works perfectly with Taj Gibson in his transition offense. So there's just what he does. I'm looking at the plays that he does, and I'm just sitting there picturing, okay, I can see Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler doing that, or I can see, you know, Doug McDermott doing that. Everything is, their personnel is already fits what he does. So I could see it being much more like a Steve Kerr type situation, replacing Mark Jackson, where there was this kind of defensive coach that was not that adept with an offense, and then, but all the personnel is there, and then he just steps in and engages the offense, and all of a sudden starts utilizing all these tools that he has at his disposal, and then the offense blows up. Because remember, like, the Warriors were like an average offense last year.
Right, right.
That was going to be my next question here with this is, do you think, obviously because Fred Hoiberg doesn't really have, doesn't have any professional coaching experience here, do you think that they need to go get, like, those executive assistant head coaches, the ones who, you know, might have failed as head coaches but proved to be excellent minds, whether it's on the offense or defense? But in this case, do you feel like that they would have to go out and get somebody who is a defensive-minded assistant?
Either if they retain somebody that already knows Tibbs' system, or even something crazy like Kirk Heinrich retires and becomes the defensive assistant. I think they don't need somebody.
That'd be a little out there in left field.
What's that?
That one's a little out there in left field. I'm still rooting for Heinrich. I know people give him crap on Twitter. I still like Heinrich's game. It's for me. But let's change up gears here because we only have 30 minutes and we got two really good theories to talk about. And I know James is dying to break down these top four teams. So, James,
pick
a series.
You know, James is a big Harden fan. Big Harden fan.
All right. Let's have a quick talk about the Harden thing. I don't know if you saw, Jacob, but through the first four games against the Clippers, Harden's numbers looked great, but I wasn't critical of him, but I wasn't happy with how he was playing. And me and Kelly, we had a pretty spirited discussion about it. Kelly was all in, and I was saying I need to see more from Harden. And I think it's funny because we saw more from Harden, and I think he did better, and his numbers looked worse. So, Kelly, talk to me about that real quick.
You know, I think that what happened is, to me, the first four games, the problem was they were doing the hack of Jordan. And then that ruined all kinds of rhythm on both ends of the court. And to me, you know, like people talk about the, you know, do you like the hack of whoever? And I think what it does is it sends the coach is sending a team a signal, I don't believe in you. I don't think you're good enough to get stops unless we do this. And so I think that can take a team psychologically just completely out of the game. So they were doing that the first four games, and Harden included, you know, but I felt like the whole team just did not have fight. It didn't show any spirit. But the last three games, especially starting with the, you know, that last quarter of game six, they were just so spirited. They were, you know, they were a different team, and I think it's because they weren't doing all the hack of whoever crap. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They were playing within the flow of the game.
What's that?
I said they were playing within the flow of the game, which is, you know, what a guy like Harden needs to. But to me, what also the change in the series was, I felt like, and I'm not going to sit here and put this on Harden, it just kind of goes as a team. I just felt like they cast better later in those games. They began to trust each other instead
right.
of kind of, you know, iso ball. I saw a lot of, you know, a lot more ball movement and, you know, nothing more evident than that Trevor Ariza three, you know, the dagger in game seven.
Yeah. I think once they started connecting like that, and it really changed the whole series. So I don't not put any blame on Harden, but I felt like Harden was kind of shouldering the whole blame for when they were down, especially those two big losses. And I felt like, you know, he was showing up as much as anybody, but he was getting all the blame for it. I don't know if Snotty was doing that so much, but, you know, because I cover Houston for Bleacher Report, you get all the, you know, there's trolls all over the place. And so, you know, you get all the Harden hate.
My thing was I watched him, and I watched the whole game. I watched him lose to the Clippers, and I wouldn't even know. I'm like, all right, he might have had 16 points, and then I see 25 on 9-for-16 shooting. He just wasn't making an impact. And you can say what you want about the – I agree with the game flow thing. I think it's true that it was a bad concept for both teams to do it. I don't have a problem with the hacker whoever. I think both of those coaches use it incorrectly. But, my thing is, you know, you got your franchise guy, the beard, second runner MVP. I don't care if your coach is doing something that you feel, quote-unquote, throws you out the rhythm. Make plays. Make things happen. And, yeah, he had the assist. He had the great shooting numbers and the efficiency. But they were getting they were getting whooped. And, like I said, I watched him play, and I was like, Harden didn't have a really good game. I see the numbers. Okay, but the numbers didn't match what I saw. And that's what I was saying. And so much I understand that this is the analytics age. I embrace analytics. But so much of basketball can't be caught in stats. And just from watching, he just didn't seem to be pushing that team. He didn't seem to be – I said this today on Twitter.
James, let's segue this to the next series here, because they are going to be playing the number one seed, you know, the Golden State Warriors, who basically, you know, number one offensive efficiency, number one defensive efficiency, every stat in the book, you know, most wins in the regular season, MVP. You can go down the list and name it. What are you expecting out of the Rockets in this series? And kind of, you know, how do you think they can overcome the Golden State Warriors?
I think it's going to be a lot tighter than people think. It seemed that those last three games against the Clippers, Houston really found a certain rhythm, a different level of belief in themselves. I mean, when you're down 19, you win by 12. That's a big deal. And, you know, when you beat a team like the Clippers, the way they beat them pretty convincingly those last three games, that's a big deal. I think Houston reached back to maybe January, February to their style, and they kind of just play ball. They seem really, disheveled those first four games, just kind of out of sorts, and like Kelly said, a lot of ISO. It seems like they found what made them the Rockets this year. They played a better defense. They were hitting those threes. I don't think we're going to see Corey Brewer and Josh Smith hit, you know, combined 5 threes in the quarter, 6 threes in the quarter, whatever it was again. But
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't make that claim, especially with Josh Smith. You know, he's shooting lights out in the postseason, and I'm being facetious if you couldn't tell. But no, he's obviously going to jack him up, so maybe he does get 5, you know, for a quarter if he jacks up 30. Who knows what he's going to do? But for me, it's going to be such a tall task, and I want to get your opinion on this too in a second, Kelly. To me, it's going to be a tall task for the Rockets because you almost feel like they have to play, you know, like that fourth quarter comeback almost every quarter against a team like the Warriors. They're going to have to share the ball even more and trust each other even more. Kelly, what's your take on how the Rockets can, I guess, win this series, if that's possible in your mind?
I think it's possible. I think they have one advantage nobody talks about, and that's their bench. During the postseason, they've been averaging their bench. They've been getting 33 points off the bench a game. Golden State's been getting 23. So that's 10 points. You know, the Golden State has the advantage with the starters, but do they have a 10-point advantage? Houston's starting five is not that bad, especially with Howard playing the way he is. So I think it is. I'm with James. I think it's going to be a lot tighter than a lot of people are.
So here's another question, and this gets brought up all the time, and I'll let you start, Kelly, and James, you follow up with it. You know, a lot of people kind of look back at the season matchups, and obviously there's a lot of factors into it. You know, who didn't play, who did play, when during the season was this game. How much stock do you put into the regular season games, Kelly?
On these, none. They had they were I think they were done with the series by January, and they had just gotten Josh Smith and Corey Brewer, so they hadn't really developed any team chemistry. And Terrence Jones wasn't there, but you know Montez Yunus was there, so that I don't put any stock into. They're a different team now than they were in January. There's just their offense got so much better as the season progressed. You know, a really interesting X factor on this series is Trevor Ariza. This I don't know. I'm back and forth on plus minus numbers because sometimes they're bogus, and sometimes you look at something and you go, wow, that's crazy. When Trevor Ariza is at least plus one, the Rockets are 44-4 in the regular season, and 8-0 in the postseason. He's zero or lower, they're 12-24 in the regular season, and 0-4 in the postseason.
That's just bananas. That's just one of those those stats like, okay, well, why aren't we playing this guy until he has a positive plus minus, and then getting him out or whatever. But no, it just goes to show the importance of the bench and more importantly, those wings that they got. You know, him, Brewer, and Smith. If those three guys can contribute in a series like this. Because to me, it's really going to come down to, and this is kind of comical considering the start of the season, it's going to be James Harden's defense because he's going to be guarding either Steph Curry or Klay Thompson. And if he doesn't do his job, and I'm not expecting Tony Allen on those guys. I mean, no one's Tony Allen, to be real. But he has to find a way to be effective defensively if he's going to make an impact in this series. He can score 30, 40 points a game, but if he's not helping slow those two guys down, it's going to be a long series for the Rockets.
Yeah, well, my prediction is between Harden and Curry, whoever scores generates the most points through passing and scoring, that team wins the series.
So, James, let me ask you this: What do the Warriors have to do? And does Draymond Green trying to guard a bigger guy like Dwight Howard or smaller guys who are quicker? Like Josh Smith, how do you see Draymond Green being effective?
It's funny you say that because I think one of the keys for Houston, Josh Smith, he's what our friend Talk Hoops Zach Harper calls a high variance player, where the highs are very high and the lows can be abysmal. So he was a key to that end of that series against the Clippers. So
right,
a big,
he started right.
Oh man, it was he played. I've been killing Josh Smith all season. I'm not a fan of his game, but I got to tip my hat to him. He played brilliantly to end that series off. So Raymond's big task is to not just match Josh. Well, he's going to match the energy. We know that. But he has to try to hold down the effectiveness of Josh Smith. And, yeah, there will be times he's on Dwight. I think Bogut can do the job against Dwight. We've seen Bogut really frustrate Dwight sometimes. Golden
right.
State's big thing is maintain. I was going to say they need to maintain it. Go ahead.
James, you know what it is? It almost seems like Dwight, when he's going against guys relative to his size, he almost doesn't seem as dominant as, you know, we were used to in Orlando days. And I know he has the back issues, and he's not 22 years old jumping out of the gym anymore. I get all that. But just, you know, throughout his career, he seemed to have trouble. Like, early on, it was Perkins. He even struggles against a guy like Roy Hibbert. If he can't overpower with size, which is something he was able to do against Blake, but, you know, we saw a struggle at times, especially early in the series against the Clippers. So I agree with you 100%. I think Bogut's going to do an excellent job on Dwight Howard this series. And that's another guy we have to look at. You know, what do you expect, Kelly, out of Dwight in this series?
Well, first I want to go back to the Josh Howard and Draymond Green thing. That's a matchup I'm really looking forward to. If you look at both their offensive and defensive numbers comparing Josh Smith in Houston with Draymond Green, their numbers are almost identical. That's going to be a really good matchup. Dwight Howard, I think he's kind of – I haven't seen him with this much bounce since he was in Orlando. I think he just needs to stay out of foul trouble. When he's gotten in early foul trouble, Houston has struggled. That's the big key for him.
So let's do a little fun here. We like to have fun in this podcast. At least I do. I don't know how Josh runs the show. No, I'm just kidding. But let's make some predictions. We'll start with James, and we'll work our way around and end on me. James, what are your predictions for this series? Or unless you want to wait until we do our post, a little Q&A.
No, I'm not scared. For the Houston-Golden State series.
Don't do the other one yet. We're going to talk about that, and then we'll break it down.
Okay. For Houston-Golden State, I got to – from what we've seen, Golden State is just too disciplined defensively, and they play on a string. Steph Curry is too much. He's going to kill Prigioni. I guess I'm hearing Beverly might be coming back. Is that right, Kelly?
Yeah.
I haven't heard that.
I haven't heard it either.
Yeah, I've been hearing rumbles about that. I'll see if we can find something about that. But either way, Steph Curry is going to be a load. I got to say Golden State. my mind wants to say Golden State in six, but I think this is almost like, you know, they call it a trap game. It's almost like a trap series because Golden State looks so dangerous, and we got Houston, the misfit gang there. So, but I'm going to say Golden State in six. Sorry, Houston fans.
Hey, Kelly, what's your prediction?
Yeah, I'm going to go Golden State in six. I'll be cheering for Houston, but Golden State's going to win it.
Now, you see, I want to disagree, but that was legit my answer. And the reason I picked that answer, because the way I'm looking at, especially these playoffs, it just seems like the team that can put points up in a hurry, which is my way of segueing to the next series. We're going to talk about the Cavaliers, because they're another team that can do this, I believe. Just they put points up in a hurry. You have a 15-point lead, and then all of a sudden you blink your eyes, and it's down to 2 or 3 points. Golden State has that weapons. The Rockets don't, although we saw it, you know, during the Clippers collapse there. But I wouldn't rely on the Rockets to be able to do that, you know, through 7 games here. And as James pointed out, that defense is just too good on Golden State. But let's jump over to the other series.
Hey, Jacob.
Go for it.
Hey, Jacob. Real quick, just for the sake of entertainment, since you guys are both picking Golden State, give me Houston in seven. I'm going to say that James Harden has found his unleashed. Dwight Howard will stay out of foul trouble. I think Golden State is going to be talking about. Give me Houston in seven, just for the. Yeah, I'm going to root for the underdog here. All right, let's go.
Well, you know what? I think the topic we didn't even mention is, you know, is James Harden, because he kind of played a little poorly, as you pointed out, after the news of the MVP award. Is this his way of showing the world it was his award? You know, that's something to keep an eye on. You know, who says he just doesn't go off and averages something crazy like 45 points a game? But let's get to the East, because the East has two interesting teams. At least one of them is very interesting to a national media standpoint. The other one's interesting in the terms of basketball heads, and that's the Atlanta Hawks and the Cleveland Cavaliers. This is a series, and I'm going to go back to what we talked about a second ago. I put a little more weight into the regular season play, but not in terms of win-losses. I was just looking at the stats of the Atlanta Hawks' three-point shooting against the Cavaliers, and they were able to shoot. And I know that, you know, they got Iman Shumpert, and they only played one game since then. That's going to be the key to the series. And it's just something I can't even pick a winner. We're going to have to talk about it before I can even make my mind up. So, James, what is your key to this series?
The key to this series is going to be DeMar Carroll on LeBron James. LeBron James hasn't lost much of a step at all, but he's still not 2012 LeBron. But DeMar Carroll is not, you know, he just really doesn't have the size. He's a great, he's a active defender, but, you know, LeBron can still play a little bully ball. So I think how the Atlanta Hawks as a team, as a unit, guard LeBron James will be key. They got to be able to suck in on his penetration and rotate back to those shooters. Or else, it, I mean, we saw Josh Smith and – yep, that's it.
Well, you know, they're one of the teams that you look up and down the roster, and I believe they got it. Even if they get into a situation where, you know, a guy like Dennis Schroeder is switched on LeBron, I'm kind of okay with that matchup for a play or two. Obviously not a whole entire game, but Dennis Schroeder is a very lengthy and kind of Rondo-esque type defender in Rondo's early days. And then at the other side of that, you know, if they get switched with Horford or Millsap, they're strong enough to hang with LeBron. So, you know, all eyes are going to be on LeBron, especially with the injuries to the Cleveland Cavaliers here, which is what I'm going to ask you about, Kelly, here. How healthy do you think Kyrie Irving's going to be in this series? Or is he just going to get worse as these games go on, kind of like he did in the Chicago series?
Yeah, I don't see it. You know, his problems are the kinds that don't get better without rest. And he, you know, kind of the schedule makers always seem to do LeBron's teams a favor, you know, so the Houston series, though it ended yesterday, starts tomorrow, gives the Cavs a couple extra days rest. But I don't think that's enough. I think he's going to be kind of going downhill a little bit. And so there's going to be more burden on LeBron. And then I was looking at some of the, you know, like this one, I'm with you that I think that some of the regular season games count a little more on this one. And looking at how many points per game LeBron gets per off of passing, because I think that's really the key. What he does scoring, even if you stop it, you're not going to beat him if you stop his scoring. You know, Jimmy Butler did as good of a job as anybody could, and
right,
they still lost. So I was looking at, you know, combined passing and scoring and what they were doing, and Atlanta beat the Cavs by taking away the pass. And I think James alluded to this too. He only averaged 11.5 points a game that he generated off the pass during the three losses. Well, the two losses during the three games played.
So that's you know, averaging out. So you give him his average points of what, 25 points a game. But he's only contributing to about 30 to 35% of the team scoring that game. And I believe they were all near or under 100 points a game those games. So
yeah. So he's I was looking at how many possessions he used and things. So it turned out like he was either passing or scoring. He was generating 0.91 points per possession versus the Hawks versus I think it was 1.06 versus the league. So they made him basically a below average player, not by taking away his penetration, but by taking away his penetration and taking away the passing lanes. They turned him into
right.
an inefficient scorer and an inefficient passer, and that's what you have to do, because he will kill you. The man just made Iman Shumpert into a three-point shooter.
Makes anybody into a three-point shooter. We could all stand on that perimeter and eventually be good at three-point shooting with that guy. You're right. It's unbelievable. And so I guess it kind of loses back to James's original point here. It all rests on DeMar Carroll. If he's able to control LeBron on a one-on-one, that allows those four other guys to worry about everybody else and prevent them from getting open, which will then cut down the passing lanes or passing opportunities for LeBron James, which will force him. It's just what I think everybody kind of wants to do. You just want to force him to, you know, take, you know, all the shots your team needs, and, you know, you just keep settling for those long twos and threes. And from what I've seen, that's the way to beat him. So, James, let me ask you one quick question before we do our picks. Did you think that Mike Budenholzer had reached out to Popovich on how to beat LeBron yet?
You know what? They'll never tell us. But those guys have a certain professional courtesy, and you know, Coach Bud is real close with Coach Pop. So I wouldn't be surprised if he picked his brain a little bit. I think another big key thing we need to look for is Jeff Teague being unleashed. John Wall did a real good job, and the Wizards did a real good job bottling up Jeff Teague. He was really kind of careless with the ball. But Kyrie can't stop a nosebleed. You know, Kyrie can't guard you and me right now.
Where this series is going to be won, I truly believe, is going to be going back to Kelly's point in the previous series, is the bench. The Hawks have a really solid bench, and, you know, the Cavs bench, it kind of goes with every LeBron James' team. Every LeBron James team has a specialist-filled bench. Not really an all-around player. I guess, you know, JR can sometimes be all-around when he's, you know, motivated not being a bozo, but for the most part, it's usually just specialists. Either, you know, you got your three-point shooters, and Mike Miller, James Jones. You got Ivan Shumpert, your defensive stopper, and J.R. Smith is your, you know, your instant offense, I like to call him. You throw him out there 10 minutes, he gets you 20 points and wins you a game. So to me, it's going to be on the bench. So Kelly, let me ask you, what is your prediction for the Eastern Conference Finals?
Atlanta in 7.
Listen, after the last round of games, we need more Game 7. So I hope both of these series go game 7 games, and I hope the finals go 7 games. James, what is your prediction for the NBA, the Eastern Conference Finals?
Here we go again, Kelly. We're in agreement. I'm going to go Atlanta. I'm actually going to go Atlanta in 6 just to be dangerous. It might go 7, but I think Atlanta is just too much, too deep.
The thing that's killing me, and I think I've asked you this question probably 4 times throughout the season here, James, and I guess I'll ask both of you this question too as a follow-up, and I'll start it with Kelly here. If you're Atlanta and you need someone to take the game-winning shot, who do you pick?
Well, in this series, I would take Teague because what James just said. Who's going to be trying to stop him? You know,
right?
Kyrie stopping those bleed Irving, and you know,
right.
but the way they play is not they're not going to play run an isolation play for one guy to take the shot. You know, that's not the way they play. They're going to give the ball to Teague and then let him make a decision about who takes the shot. So you know, if they say, okay, well, we're going to put LeBron on Teague, well then, you know, you give it to Korver, or you know,
Let me rephrase this question. When your team is in a slump, and or it's just Atlanta Hawks are in a slump here, and they need someone to go out and get a few buckets in a row for them, and your answer is probably the same here, but who's that guy for you?
Yeah, that would be Teague. And that is a different question. It's a good question. You need that guy that's going to break out of the Chicago Bulls doldrums or whatever.
That's the best way. I didn't want to be disrespectful to the Bulls when I asked that question, but that was exactly my point. James, real quick, who are the Hawks going to need to jump out there in a couple seconds? Who's that guy
I've been
saying, the nosebleed?
Yep, I've been saying this. I wish that Coach Bud went and ran sets and called Paul Millsap's number a little more and let him roll some, because I think Millsap is – He's big, he can shoot, he can put the ball on the floor and beat most bigs to the hole. I think he should be the guy that, you know, I'm not saying I love the ball-moving offense, but if they need a big bucket, I think Millsap's the guy to go to. And as we saw last game, hey, put the ball by the rim, let Horford go get it.
Right now, he has a career of making some big shots, especially in Utah, he's won a couple of games out there. To me, the difference maker in this series is LeBron, and he goes off. I just see him turning into Superman for this series and willing them into the NBA Finals. As much as I probably don't want that personally, but I think that's what's going to happen. He's way too good. But that will do it for us here at NBA Unplugged. We have to thank our man Kelly Scaletta coming by. Follow him on Twitter. It's how you spell it, Kelly Scaletta. Lucky guy got his own name on a Twitter handle. I was taken. And thank you, James, as well for stopping by. I'm filling in for Josh. I hope he'll be back next week. Let's wish him well. And, guys, get ready for the NBA Conference Finals tomorrow.
Let's go.
Let's do it.